Welcome to the Bards FM podcast. This is Scott Kesterson, and tonight you're listening to Red October Was a PSYOP. This war is real. Fighting is everything. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Tempt not the righteous man to draw his sword. Conviction, righteousness, ruthlessness. To understand tolerance, you have to understand the line of intolerance. War is the teacher, soldiers are the students. They become the bards of war.
Good evening, patriots. Well, we have, today is Friday, October 22nd, and we've now survived another week of crazy, which is about where our whole world is upside down right now. To add to that craziness is this headline that comes out of the Times of India today, that the money man behind Trump's media company, Patrick Orlando, and his firm are runs a firm in Wuhan, China. Don't even ask me to explain this one. So, yep. Trump's guy who's running his media company is also running a company, his own firm in Wuhan. Okay. There we go. It just gets crazier and crazier. So we are really into a period with what is known as fourth generation warfare. And to really understand that, we're going to go back a little bit to the October Revolution, put it in context to some of its origins, which was the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia in October 1917. We're going to talk a little bit about that and then move into kind of what we're dealing with in a couple different perspectives for this evening. But before we begin tonight, MyPillow is a fantastic supporter of Bards FM and was an incredible supporter for Bards Fest. MyPillow.com/Bards is our new Bards FM page on MyPillow site. So it's MyPillow.com/Bards. And you can use your promo code there to get all sorts of amazing savings. And this is a great way to support a company that supports America, has a CEO who loves America, fights for America. He's a Christian, one of the great patriots and CEOs of our time, Mike Lindell. So it's a great place to get your Christmas gifts, especially since they're telling you that Christmas is going to be late. 11% of the families, by the way, this year are not buying Christmas presents. It's probably an opportunity to either financially, I believe that's probably the issue. We have to start looking to help families for Christmas. And there's probably no better place to buy great products that people can use in their homes, sheets, towels, pillows, comforters to stay warm, especially in this winter, using MyPillow. So whatever your motive is, MyPillow.com/Bards, great place to go to get great savings, buy great products from a great American company, support liberty on the entire way, and if you're so inclined to help one another. So that's MyPillow.com/Bards, and your promo code is Bards, B-A-R-D-S. Also, Expedition Coffee, X-P-E-D, ExpeditionCoffee.com. You can also get there by going to BardsFM.com. And click on the logo, the Expedition Coffee logo, right off the front page, and it'll take you right to the expeditioncoffee.com page. That is an incredible coffee designed specifically to increase your mental alertness, give you that energy boost you need with coffee each day, and to help improve your overall health and wellness. Expedition Coffee was designed to also support the healing of gut health. And with that, when you go to expeditioncoffee.com site, XPED, the expeditioncoffee.com site, you're going to see that there's some great products in addition to the coffee. Gut Health Triad, which is an amazing series of products to help heal and seal your gut. They are all natural and are fantastic products to help improve your overall body health. We also have Immune XP, which is a natural anti-inflammatory and powerful immune booster with pine cone extract, humic and fulvic acid, and also Pure 747, which is a silver supplement that's an incredible way to boost your health and keep yourself healthy in this very COVID, SARS, nasty environment. One of the best products, if not the best products on the market for overall health and immunity boosting. So head on over to Expedition Coffee, X-P-E-D, expeditioncoffee.com. Check those out or go to bardsfm.com and click on the Expedition Coffee logo. So one of the things that is often forgotten in our history is the details around the October Revolution. Right now, a lot of people are celebrating Red October in a unique way. It's like, this is the big month of reveal. This is when things are happening. One thing that is for sure is we're in the month of increased deception and a massive psyop that only gets more crazy by the day. We really have no direct clarity anymore on where we stand and who to trust. And this is by design. And this is part of the fourth generation warfare model. So let me give you, before we start, a few things to think about in terms of fourth generation. The elements of fourth generation warfare are complex. So you have a complex operating environment, which translates for most people as confusing and disorienting. And it's a long-term operating environment. One of the tactics of fourth generation warfare is terrorism, or at least terror, the image of terror and fear, very critical to fourth generation warfare. Other elements include a non-national or transnational base, highly decentralized, hence like global international companies, CEOs, banking cartels, criminal, transnational, transgenerational elements that run this. A direct attack on the enemy's culture, including genocidal acts against civilians. So that would be rewriting cultural norms, tearing down historical monuments and trying to rewrite histories, and things like a bioweapon that you would inject into people that would cause sustained and long-term damage or enduring pain and casualty. Another issue is all available pressures are used. So political, economic, social, and military. And that's used, and this is two-directional, but right now we kind of look at it, what's coming at us right now, and all of that proves true. I would, in addition to that, I would include things like legal and educational, because we're seeing those institutions. It's what's called a low-intensity conflict, and it's involving what they say are actors in many networks. So you have lawyers involved with politicians, involved with teachers, involved with doctors. And as a low-intensity conflict, it's very hard for people to wrap their head around it because you're not seeing physical violence, gunfighting in the streets. And especially here, as the way they can capture the narrative with the media, any types of violence like that are either going to be classified as radical extremists, this particular right wing, or they're going to be classified as gun owners, or they're going to be classified as anti-vax. And pretty much anybody that's pro-United States now is a, if you love your country, and particularly if you love God and you love the country, you are now a domestic terrorist, according to our tyrannical government. Non-combatants are tactical dilemmas. In this fight, that's not so true. Non-combatants are very much a critical part of the fight in terms of the threat. And we see that with the FBI sweep up of those involved in the November or December 6th peaceful protest. Lack of hierarchy. So it's difficult to identify who the leadership structure is. That's very predominant in fourth generation warfare. Small size, spread out network of communication and financial support. So what you see is a distributed network with the control of the media. It looks large. It's difficult to keep track of it. And in this area, it's very difficult to know exactly who's where it is at all times, but it seems to be everywhere. Use of insurgency tactics as subversion, terrorism, guerrilla tactics. We've seen that through the implementation of BLM and Antifa, and obviously our media, and then decentralized forces. So all of this is the nation, this fourth generation fight that we're in right now. The deep state has the equivalent of full armies, but you don't see them because they're not conventional in form. So Antifa, BLM, MS-13 terrorists, you have other Somalian terrorists and Hezbollah, all of those elements coming in. You've got cartel members. Those are all part of their army. And it's a significant force and well-armed, decentralized, very difficult to track. So that's kind of the formation of fourth-generation warfare. So let's take a step back in time. The October Revolution is tagged as the beginning of the Russian Revolution, which actually went from 1917 to 1923. And the October Revolution was when the Bolsheviks, which were actually led by Lenin, when Lenin was actually backed by German intelligence, so this is where this thing is a whole bunch of nonsense, brought the people up into a fight to overthrow the government. And the way that it's generalized when we talk about the Russian Revolution is it sounds like it was a very quick and fast and rapid takeover of the government. But in fact, it was really anything but that. The Bolsheviks stood up and they did their little thing in a couple different areas. There was an assault on the Winter Palace, which really didn't have any action. Most of the people stood down. They were, remember, at this point in time in Russia, about 90, depends on who you read, but the estimate was about 97% of the Russians were in a peasant class state. So there was a low education level. Most peasants were illiterate. They were a kind of a hand-to-mouth type existence, very short on food. They worked in very dismal conditions, lots of pretty high levels of poverty throughout Russia. And then there was a czarist class that we would refer to today as an elite that was represented anywhere from three, as large as three and as small as 1%, depending on who is making an assessment of the Russians at that time. So the Bolsheviks were, to a certain degree, many of them were very frustrated. There was a well-educated element that led the Bolsheviks. And there was essentially two parties at this point in time, Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks. The Mensheviks would be very much like the apathetic and feckless Republican Party. And then the Mensheviks the Bolsheviks functioned more and more like this aggression of the Democrat Party. So they came to a decision to have their uprising in October. And they began their uprising in Petrograd, now known as St. Petersburg. And in this process, they took over the Winter Palace. And so this was kind of a ripple effect. It is seen when it's done this, the way they rewrote the story. They rewrote the story, which we'll get to in a moment, of kind of portraying this as like the whole nation rose up and they stood up against the evil czar and they toppled the evil government and they set up the government of the people. Well, that isn't at all true, because what actually happened is once the Bolsheviks stood up, the country spun itself into a civil war. And that civil war endured till about 1923. So 1917 to 1923 range, that was the Russian Revolution, which is actually, that's how they call it, I think, because remember, victors write the history, but in fact, it was a civil war. And it was a civil war against the Bolsheviks from what was called as the White Russians, which are the traditional Russians that go over into the Ukraine region and what we call the Eastern Bloc now, and many other factional elements that did not want to be controlled by a centralized government. There were also, that's when you saw the breakaway of Finland and other countries on that perimeter that broke away. And so with all of this, there was an ongoing fight, which ultimately the Bolsheviks won. And part of the reason they were able to be so successful in their victory as this went along was a very effective information campaign. Once they got active, one of the big things the Bolsheviks did was to get very much close to the people and to keep information flowing. Now remember, the elites had just disregarded the people. And so it was not difficult for the Bolsheviks to fill that gap with whatever information they had and to elevate the people up and to get them mobilized and to get them focused on a story, whether it was true or not, to get a story going that would convince them of the greatness of the Great Revolution that they were part of. Now, this is a period of time that we're in from the Russian Revolution that was, or the Russian Civil War, which was the, it was Lenin's leadership time. And also Lenin was tied in with Trotsky, and Trotsky was a ruthless individual who believed openly in an assassination, and he believed openly in taking down the West. But the October Revolution now, as we paint it, when we talk about Red October, that's its origins. That's the one of it. That's the connection. I mean, it's listed as the October Revolution, the Great October Socialist Revolution, the Bolshevik Coup, the Bolshevik Revolution, October Uprising, October Coup, or Red October. So when you hear Red October, whatever metaphor they're using in it now, the origins of it had to do with the rise of the Bolsheviks. And the critical part about that model is it was a vanguard, meaning it was a small elite group that organized and toppled the entire nation, not unlike what happened on November 3rd. And I've said this to you, and I feel very strongly about it. The one thing you have to come to grips with is the United States has fallen. That's a critical component for us to get our heads around. We have fallen. In fact, we can talk about how far back that went, and it's not for tonight's show. But the actual total seizure of government and control happened on November 4th. That's when they completed their coup. And then from the following months, they've seized control. And we see where we are almost a year later with whatever things people want to say and talk about, you know, the failure of the Biden regime, which is true. The fact of the matter is that the country has been taken over, and that's where we sit right now. That's an important parallel, because when looking at the October Revolution, the Bolsheviks took over in November, ultimately, of 1917. The revolution occurred in October. So if you look back to 2020 and you look at what happened during the month of November, of October, you will remember a year ago the sorts of, we had fires going on. Our forest up here was burning thanks to Antifa. We had hurricanes. We had all these things. It's a different form of warfare, but it was the same principles. And all these things were happening as Wuhan was incubating and getting ready to launch its this COVID, SARS-CoV-2 with an elevated spike protein. They're getting ready to launch that. That all happened. So the Bolsheviks then seize control in November, but it takes them from 1917 to 1923 to lock in power. And during that time is when the real fight endures. But the information control was their greatest weapon against the white Russians. They were able to get to the people and elevate that up. Once control was accomplished, then they began the greater picture of rewriting Russian history and perspectives. And one of the key people involved in that was Eisenstein. And Eisenstein is an interesting individual for all that he's done, because he was a Russian filmmaker. He was Sergei Eisenstein, which was a Russian filmmaker, correct myself, because it wasn't Russia at that point. It was Soviet Union. He was a Soviet filmmaker. And one of the key films he let out in 1925, and this is important because after this revolution was squashed, its civil war was squashed, and Lenin had then died, and Stalin seized power, and Stalin took power, he began the purge. And the purge was to wipe out what they were referring to as the intelligentsia, which was the intellectual class of people that were the smart ones, and probably many of them supporting the Bolsheviks. But as always happens in these tyrannical overthrows, it's the people that are closest to the truth that they wipe out first. So he starts with his film in 1925 called The Strike, which was to celebrate a previous time, 1903, I believe, of the people uprising and rising up against the evil industrialists. And then he follows that with what is, it's an epic film known as The Battleship Potemkin, in which they celebrate the glory of the taking over of the Potemkin and the fight for the people. And there's some subtle little things in there of disregard of getting rid of God and rising up as the people of the true sense of people and the communist way. And and leading the great forces against the Tsar. All of this was done to rally and reshape history, and it was very effective because one of the things that he did was film at that time was very new, and he was using silent film techniques. I later went on to study with Charlie Chaplin, by the way. But he was using silent film techniques. But what was critical about this in his silent film techniques is that he was painting visual pictures with people, many of whom, remember, peasant class. Peasant class is still peasant class. It hasn't changed much since 1917. And he's now painting pictures, visual pictures for people, telling them a visual story with people that have never seen moving images. And they did a very effective job, just like they did with their propaganda during the early phases of that Civil War, 17 to 23, of distributing the film across the country and getting people to visually see film for the first time, which left an indelible image on their mind of what the real story was, quote unquote. And then we're able to use that as a way to unify their support for the dictator of Stalin that was just in power. All of that is in to set in context for you to appreciate that the October Revolution, or Red October, the Bolshevik rise, was not a singular act, and it wasn't just a quick takeover of power. And that's kind of the PSYOP. It was all based on a PSYOP. It was based on the idea of PSYOPing people from the very beginning, of a small vanguard of people seizing control, and later, when they even later, that seizing of control was basically a nonviolent taking of the Winter Palace. There wasn't a lot of action, but then later, even later, rewriting that as the glorious fight for the motherland of Russia to topple down the evil Tsarist forces and all this nonsense, right? But it was from the very beginning, they didn't take the whole country. They seized the country, and then they seized the critical component in Petrograd, and then used their influence of information to make people believe that the whole country had toppled. This is the mechanisms that you're witnessing now. It's the same principle, except that they're far more sophisticated. So when we look at the fourth generation element of this, there was a lot of similarities to what happened in the Red October. And so when I hear people reference Red October, there are not a lot of people that take time to reference what it really was in history. And it's important to keep it in context because it has been mentioned, and there's a lot of patriot nonsense going on out there about, you know, oh, this is Red October, it's going to be the Great Awakening. That's not the way it was historically. And I'm not saying it can't be used that way if it actually changes, but Red October was a PSYOP to keep people believing in something bigger than it was. And this is really important to keep in mind. Okay, because there is this, I keep going back to this hopium piece of people desiring to believe that just going to, like, I can tell you right now, and I'm going to quote it because he said he was going to say it. Juan Osevin is over in the Riga this weekend. He's been saying there's going to be arrests. Like, all right, you know, great. So we got more hopium pumping into the system. But what does that actually mean? If you're trying to run a PSYOP on people and get their emotions up, if that doesn't come true, that's an emotional crash. And once again, it's frustration, and it leaves people out of the fight. The Bolsheviks did a very good job of keeping their information flow steady, very much like we have with this very organized and effective media PSYOP that's been running against the people of the world, in particular the people of the United States. And they kept that sustained action, and they could continue to build the films, and they could continue to fill the void of information because they controlled it. But on the other side of that PSYOP, the truth was much darker. The truth was a civil war. The truth was that there was some heavy-duty fighting. In fact, Stalin, and this is another interesting one, in 1918, Stalin was sent to fight the White Russian armies. And those Russian armies were primarily centered around Ukraine, what we call Ukraine today. Okay, why that is important is why the reason he went to fight is because food was the subject they were fighting over. Food had become so scarce that Stalin launched his forces in to seize control and to take the food. And what ended up happening in that fight, his forces, the loyal Red Army, got slaughtered by the White Russians. Okay, but of course, that's not going to be portrayed that way. So this is... there's a lot of this ebb and flow in fighting, and in the fourth generation model, information warfare and your perception of reality is a central theme. So there's a lot more to understanding Red October. And I could say just a simple read is it was the overthrow of Russia. The answer to that is no, it wasn't. It was the beginning of a civil war. So again, the right way it was won through psyoping the public and ultimately leading the public to the belief that the Bolsheviks were the stronger army, whether or not they were, very critical. But the reason they became stronger is because people believed they were stronger. Just like people believe the dollar is worth something when it's worth nothing, but you have faith in the dollar because it's a currency of exchange that people believe in, but there's nothing behind it. Very similar to what was done with in the period of 17 to 23. So where we are today is at a very critical parallel. And a lot of things are coming down the pipe that are disturbing and they're not stopping. This enemy, there's a real perception that came out of, that has come out over the last 4 years. And I've talked some about this, in particular 5 years. And there's a lot of things that are beginning, more things that are getting revealed. And it's very difficult for people to process critically certain areas of this fight. The one thing to understand about the Bolsheviks, which I think is very important, is, and the White Russians, is they had no questions about what had happened. The Bolsheviks understood very clearly that they were taking over a nation and they were going to take it over at any cost. The White Russians and other elements that were fighting against them, the anti-Bolshevik forces, understood very clearly what was at stake and took to arms to defend that. And in the end, that fight didn't necessarily work out for the White Russians, but the fact of the matter is that in the end, that happened because the Bolsheviks controlled the narrative, okay? Today, our fight is still very much in a passive realm. And there's a lot of, we're dealing with an extremely vicious army, and we're looking towards a vicious enemy, that has only one objective at any cost: to destroy all of Western society. That's being driven in part by the CCP, who wants a complete Chinese world, and anybody that's left becomes their slaves, with a strong contingent of leadership and infiltration throughout our agencies, government, corporations that have been promised something in return, money, power, whatever, that are in support of the eradication of the Western world, and then later the eradication of other parts of the world. If we look at the play field right now, they're making some pretty solid advances. And they're making solid advances in part because they were able to push the PSYOP and create the perception that they have the power, very much like the Bolsheviks. Now, the difference being that they have institutional power where the Bolsheviks did not. However, once the Bolsheviks took over the Winter Palace, arguably they created and achieved institutional power and strength. So that's where they had an advantage over the White Russians. And once you control the narrative, it's very hard, as we know through these last 4 years of digital warfare, to break that narrative and get to the truth. So the place that we are at right now is a very critical juncture in the fight. And this fight it's very real, it's very visceral, and there's going to be some very real consequences. When we look at the global playboard right now in this fourth generation of warfare, some people, by the way, would refer to this as fifth generation, and that's fourth and fifth generation are in debate right now. I'm going to use fourth generation just in case you hear that term. Fifth generation warfare tends to talk more about the psychological and cognitive parts of warfare. And in fact, if you read recently, NATO has now declared cognitive warfare to be a primary element. NATO's a bunch of idiots to begin with. I've worked with them. Most of them have their head rectally placed, and they're just ginning up stuff that we were already working on in 2012. Now to really what they're trying to do is defend their elites by trying to come up with a mechanism to be able to willfully use psyops on the public. The unique part about the fourth generation warfare is it's not centralized. So you will have elements within the military, within the government and corporate and public sectors like doctors, lawyers, school teachers, educators, and even citizens then that are, have all come together on a general approach to fighting. And this is what we have been witnessing. And it's very Bolshevik oriented because it was a vanguard, meaning not a large percentage of the population. My guess is what happened is we were taken over by probably a handful of about 2 million, maybe 3 million people. Proportionally, that's less than 10% of the United States. And it might have even been smaller. The actual agents of this are probably down to like 100,000. But what they've managed to do with the effectiveness of the media, just like the Bolsheviks did, is they've been able to persuade the public. But they got smart because they realized that you're not going to be able to sell leftist garbage to this country. And thanks to a Republican deep state that has very much been part of this plan of minimizing, neutralizing, and marginalizing the right, in as the left went aggressively after their agenda, we've ended up with a situation where we are right now, where this elite seized power and then through the mechanisms of media, instead of trying to sell this new evolution of government, they buried that and they've been selling the fear of SARS-CoV-2. And that's the part that breaks people and breaks their will, because in fear, they turn to the state, which has now been run by a modern version of Bolsheviks that want only one thing, power at any cost. Even more draconian than the Bolsheviks, because the Bolsheviks still wanted the people to be part of their plan, and meaning they still needed the people to industrialize their nation. They needed to turn people into willful slaves. They were very effective at it. And Stalin was very effective at taking away the resistance by wrapping up anybody that didn't like him and sticking them in gulags out in Siberia. Yeah, it was kind of a speak up and you're going to go chip rocks in the snow, right? So what we have today is what typifies this type of fight is we have a transnational, and don't think, and when I, it's funny because that word actually, I laugh because that word actually has dual meaning in this day, because most of these people involved in this leadership are gender flips. Many, I should say many of them are, and most all of them are pedophiles. So we have a deviant class of transnational, which dual meaning, and they are international, and they're transgenerational, meaning they've gone through many generations of working through this concept. They're not nation-specific, and they've come together disguising themselves in the front of being part of nation-states. The nation-state is dead, and it's been dead a long time, but people are still clinging on to the nation-state, and they've done that model of nation-state fortification, if you will, to keep people divided. So people would say, oh, you're an American and I'm a Russian and we can't get along, that sort of thing. Which, by the way, if the Americans and Russians ever really got along like we should, and because we are so much alike in so many ways, the world would literally transform in about 6 days. I'm not kidding. It is the intensity of the Russian with the intensity of the true American patriot. It's a glorious mix. Seriously, there's a lot of commonality in the way we see the world and believe in the world and the way we hate evil, especially pedophiles. So this is kind of the world we currently live in with this vanguard group that has seized control, running the narrative on people and getting them to willfully comply. But instead of complying to a new and better world, they're going to break it first and through fear, and they're going to crush people's will through fear. And this is the PSYOP. And the PSYOP is massive because people are locked into a way of thinking. And to add to that, they're starting to build the infrastructure to keep people in that constant state of this alternate reality. Now, I've talked about this before, but it's very critical to understand that at the point of when this fear hit its maximum peak is when people couldn't rationalize fear. And the core of what the resistance, we are the resistance, by the way, and I don't say that to coin anybody else's term. I mean, we are a remnant, but the remnant represents a radical resistance. And what has separated us from the mass is our stalwart belief, unwavering commitment to God and through Christ Jesus. And I don't say that in a very respectful way theologically, but I also say that in a very tactical and strategic way too, because that belief system is unwavering when you're truly there. We have already seen the churches collapse. We've seen them persuade what I would call I don't really, they're not really true Christian in my opinion. They've been misled and they're willfully leading themselves off the deep end with this shot. That's an issue we can deal with on another level of salvation and return and healing and all this other stuff. But this group that we are part of is standing strong here. Is centered on God. It's centered on our belief that God's leading us, and we are a major threat to this other side. Okay? So we are at odds, right? This is the war. And they're going to continue to wage a war against us in many different ways, but they aren't going to do it through, they're going to do it by continuing to try to break the other people. The people, there's people still in that middle ground. And there's more, and the people that are already in the fear segment of this, okay, they've been brought to a point in their life where the alternate reality, and this goes back about a year roughly, when this whole thing was, it goes back to spring, when this whole thing was peaked up and the virus has gone everywhere and it's gone crazy and all this fear and the mask and all this other nonsense, actually that is a year ago, and then we bring out the injection, like we're going to save everybody. Well, the fear is so extreme that the mind literally snapped on a lot of people. And when I say that, the mind accepts, in order to rationalize itself out of the fear anxiety mode, in order to save the physiology of the body, it accepts the new reality, which is saying that, yes, we're under siege of a pandemic. So they lock into this new reality and they no longer want to hear anything else. And as people begin to awaken, they spin up the fear again. Now, I'm not going to tell you that they're totally winning, because obviously by their narrative and their panic of always threatening people, telling people that, like, the non-vaxxers, us, the anti-vax movement, which is literally, they're saying to you, us now, that we are killing people. We're genocidal or something like that. It's like, awesome. You know, I'm really proud of that moment, actually. And if anybody's listening and you are a pro-vaxxer, please understand that I'm very happy that I'm anti-vaxxer and I'm causing misery, apparently, according to you. Because I guess, but that doesn't matter. So all of this is a constant and complete mind fight. Okay, everything is being turned and flipped on its head. And with that, that's why I opened with this comment today. And I honestly don't know what to make of this. But I'm just trying to give you the complexities of this fight. I know what people are going to do, because I'm going to read it again, and I know what people are going to do, but I want to point out some things as we do this. So bear with me and don't get all spun up. Okay, what I just read was the Times of India. The money man behind Trump's media company runs a firm in Wuhan. So there's going to be a number of things. There's one's going to say, well, Trump's trying to shine light on the Wuhan problem. Someone else is going to say, well, Trump may not know. He's not been informed. Okay? Patriots, all I'm saying is right now, everything you're seeing is moving in a dynamic and crazy way. You're starting to see things that you would never have seen before because of the pace of this fight. And one thing you can't do is hold on to belief systems other than a solid belief system, which we can be constant with, and that's the relationship with God. Imagine the difference of two things, and this is where the PSYOP works and where we defeat it. When you step into these narratives, like this one, the money man behind Trump's media company runs a firm in Wuhan, I can immediately make a judgment and say, that's a lie, because it came from Bloomberg. Okay, fair enough, but it also is on the Times of India site, which happens to do some interesting reporting. Okay, Patrick Orlando, well, he just has a firm that's working there. He's not related to Wuhan. Okay, Trump is making, anytime we start to get into these engagements, we start to flow with the propaganda. What makes the difference in success is when you stand on the outside of this propaganda stream and you look at this and you go, interesting data point. Let's see what happens. And you start adding up these data points. Now, I'm going to pick on President Trump a little bit. Notice I did say President Trump. I'm going to be clear about this. We also know that he's been very vocal lately about he supports the vax. That makes no sense to me, because historically he's been anti-vax. All right. So again, I'm sitting back and I'm watching. I've said very clearly that regardless of what happens, the president will have to owe a testimony as to why he was pushing the vax if we're going to have full disclosure, justice, and truth. That doesn't change. That goes with everybody. This is another one of these situations. But when I say this, why I say staying on the outside, this fight, when you jump into this and you take an example of this, of jumping in and taking a position on Trump, you're forgetting where we are. Our strength is, our strength is sitting with God, not sitting with the empire of men. Okay, this is where we go back to a lesson from the Bolsheviks. The Bolsheviks took over, and people were eager right away to fight for power, seeing the Tsar as evil, and all these things were going on. And they polarized themselves, and then they ended up in a civil war, which led to something. Right now, our position, we are in a fourth generation fight, which means that you don't have a clear visibility on who your enemy is. Period. I am not, just so I don't get stupid emails, I am not saying Trump is your enemy. So be clear about that. But I am telling you, these are data points you better pay attention to. Remember, I've said there are three paths, not two. There's probably more than that, but I'm dividing the world, this current issue, into three paths. So as we step back and walk in that place of God, we are observing what's happening. But the one thing we also have to appreciate is we're not disconnected from this fight. Our message in fourth generation warfare is quite disruptive. In fact, it's lethal in many ways, because we're stepping back on a fight where they're trying to control people through the same mechanisms as the Bolsheviks. They're trying to use fear. They're trying to use perception of psyop, perception of dominance. And we're not. In our greatest fight right now, in looking at the lessons from the Bolsheviks, is that as we step back and hold to our faith and our walk, our message doesn't take sides with any of them. We don't end up with as white Russians fighting them against our political position is better than your political position. That's all political nonsense. And God doesn't play politics. The strength that we have in this movement, this remnant, I'm going to call it Bard's Nation, because I'm here and I'm happy to be here. Bard's Nation place, this remnant that we have, the strength that we're standing in is to step back from this. When someone says there's going to be arrest, you say, okay. Great. I don't know what that means. What is that? What is suddenly everything's going to change? The answer is no. Nothing's going to change. It's going to be a few arrests. When someone says, supply chains are a problem. Okay, let's look at the facts. And if I'm seeing it like I am, it's like, okay, they are a problem. What does that mean? How long does that take to correct them? Well, right now, as the way supply chains are and the way they're being corrected, it's going to take months to fix them, if not a year or two. So you can start to put these in perspective to a very constant foundation that is not in the mix of their propaganda and is a lethal hit against their propaganda. In the sense of the Bolsheviks, had the people had the awareness to realize that the Bolsheviks had only taken over the winter castle or whatever it was, that moment right then that they leveraged and then went on to build something, people could have said, wait a minute. Yeah, but you guys only did a little bit of work up here. And there was other sporadic fighting. I'm kind of over. It was the Winter Palace, by the way. I'm overplaying that for a reason, because that became their big event. Just like November 3rd and 4th becomes their big event, that Biden steals the office and he sits now in an open studio in a fake White House and people go, okay, it's all right. There's no cognitive questioning going on here. Right? Just as you take an injection with a 99.8% survival rate and you take an injection and say, oh, that's okay, I'll take an experimental mRNA injection. Just like when the CDC says today that we're about ready to change the definition of vaccinated, meaning that you are going to probably add you're going to have the fourth booster to be considered vaccinated. They're playing the same game all over the world. They're doing it together. And there are these questions of like, well, how come everybody's doing the same thing at once? Because it's not real. It's a psyop designed, unfortunately, designed for a singular thing, to kill each and every one of us, to depopulate the world, and to ultimately let this CCP run operation assume control over the entire world and import Chinese all over the place to start taking over the landmass. That's a true statement, okay? So when we are taking, and it's, again, I'm going back to the Trump headline. What does it mean that Trump's media guy is running a firm in Wuhan? I have no idea. But what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to jump in and defend Trump, and I'm not going to condemn him. I'm just going to say that needs to be justified. That needs to be explained at some point in time. But for now, it's a data point. What I'm going to get back to is what's the real fight? Because part of this is a distraction, right? Where's the real fight? Where are we? There is still a real tendency, and this is where the traps are built, and one has to be extremely careful with them. And I know that I'm probably not in a majority in what I'm about ready to say. I support President Trump for what he's done to help build the unity and strength in this nation. I support President Trump for what he did to awaken the reality in us of what the real problem was, which was not only the deep state, but also the CCP. Okay? I am openly against President Trump's position on the vax, period. There's no exceptions to that, never will be one. And I can understand what he did up through Operation Warp Speed, but at the end of the day, there has to be accountability. I am making no big deal about the fact that he has now started his social media platform. I'm like, okay, good. It's going to be another Twitter, but it's going to be run by Trump. Great. I don't care, because at the end of the day, the way this is being looked at from my position is that's more about building stock value right now than building an actual capability for Patriots. We'll see what happens when it's delivered. All of these things, if you take a very neutral value and place yourself in the walk with God, there's going to be a distancing from the propaganda wars that are going on. President Trump is shooting volleys across the aisle over to the left, and he's telling them, I've got a media platform for Patriots, and they're like, oh my goodness, let's attack Trump some more. And that's that sort of fighting that's going on between the elites. Our walk, if we're walking that place with God, is like, yeah, big deal. Because in the end, what is that accomplishing? What is more social media accomplishing right now? Nothing when it comes to the county by county model. Nothing when it comes to securing our homes for the coming cold winter, because you can't eat digital food. You might try, but it's not going to work. So to add to this a little bit as we kind of wind this down tonight is to really look at where we have come in this fight. We aren't using terms for a variety of reasons about lethality, okay? In a fourth generation warfare, lethality looks very different than a third generation warfare. Third generation warfare is going to be more kinetic. It's going to be using indirect fire. It's going to be using things like we did in World War II, okay? But in a fourth generation warfare, what does lethality look like? Well, lethality is when you wake somebody up. Lethality is when you separate somebody from the narrative of fear and you put them into the walk of strength, which in the only ticket out of that right now is truth and ultimately a grounding in Christ Jesus and God. That's it. That's the only path out. Anybody that tells you otherwise, like a bunch of Indians today, I'm sorry, yeah, it was a bunch of Italians today, sat on a square and they all meditated. I'm like, okay. So we've got a bunch of Catholics that are fed up with the church, and so they're going to meditate to whatever to solve the world. It isn't going to work, okay? There has to be this conviction and strength of what we do, and that strength is helping people wake up and walk towards the strength that they need to continue to be awake and not be persuaded. And this is a spiritual war. When you look at, I did some passage on these videos going around on the Brandon thing right now. They're singing this Brandon song. And I have to tell you, I laughed so hard because I was like, are you serious? Like, people are like, Brandon, let's go, Brandon. It's like really growing. And it's like, okay. Half of the people they were showing these videos were women, young girls with collagen lips looking pouty, I don't even know what they were doing other than trying to look cute and sexy. And it's like, that's a revolutionary statement. I'm sure that's going to scare the deep state. Yeah, a lot. You know, I mean, this is where we are right now in people trying to find this kind of easy way through and not realizing that they're not really breaking from the matrix. Now, it's kind of some closing thoughts. I just want you to think about this. In the sense of power, when you think about our founding fathers, they broke the narrative. They opposed openly the king. They wrote the documents, and they took the action to separate from the crown. Hear these words. They were dangerous men. They were dangerous men. Hear these words. The hello Brandon or heck Brandon dance contest with collagen lips does not translate to dangerous people. I'm just telling you, okay? You have to have the conviction to be able to stand in this fight. And to, and the strength is to stand with God and to stand outside of that narrative influence. Take all things with a measure of caution, as I would say a jaundiced eye. Don't jump to the defense of either thing. Return back to that comfort and strength within God's fold and watch this fight go on as we build our ranks of strength. And those ranks of strength should be deep. They should be local as we're doing it. They should be subversive in the effects that they create. And they should be tectonic in the amount of shaking that they create to the system when they're fully implemented. That's the goal. We are now in this post-American moment, post-United States moment. The country has been taken over. It's collapsed. It's only by name. And the question now is, what type of future do we have? And the only way we're going to stabilize this craziness is to retake it, in my opinion, county by county, at the very local level where we connect with one another using our bridge in our faith and our love of God. And when we do that, and we really truly reset that constitution at a top level, whatever this other warfare is, this slinging of nonsense besides one another, we are outside of their narrative. We have moved to another position, completely shifted outside their matrix of control, and we've done it quietly until they suddenly wake up and go, what just happened? It's like, what just happened is we ripped the rug out from underneath you, and now we're going to bring you to justice. Let us pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time, and thank you for these reflections, both historically and present, to compare them, to open our eyes, to open our hearts to all that we face and the challenges that we face in this day. Lord, one thing that we pray that we can truly embrace is this idea of strength in this time. We look to people, we look to those leaders in biblical history like David. We look to Joshua. We look to Gideon. Each of those have different levels of, all have great strength and have different levels of action. And let us learn from those levels of action of what that actually means. Especially in this day, Lord, when so much is being focused on controlling our minds, our thoughts, and our perception of truth. Let us always remember that truth rests with you, and as we anchor ourselves truly with you, we can pull ourselves away from this craziness and see with an open eyes, as with the eyes that you give us to see and the ears you give us to hear. And we say these things in Christ Jesus' name. Amen. There are some challenges we face, and that's fine. And it's not easy. And each step, there's a lot of things we have to discern and a lot of things to step back from, not to get wrapped into these emotional fights. And we seem to be in this sudden era of patriot rallies, whether it's medical tyranny rallies or whether it's patriot rallies. And I'm not really sure how this suddenly happened, but it's like ticket prices went from 500 to 1,000 to a 3,000. And it's like, what's our motive here, right? Look cautiously at these things. Ask the deeper questions and really ask what the motivation is. There is these people those that are trying to raise this up, if they're raising money, then let's find out what they're raising money for. Where is it going? How is it being applied? But there is a lot of this going on right now, and there's a lot of, you're going to hear this more and more, like, you know, we need to get to those that have money to run this thing. You've heard me talk about that. This fight is not based on money, as much as people will try to tell you otherwise. And those that are telling you otherwise don't understand the true sense of a counterinsurgency. They've never done it. I'm not toting my horn, but I have. Okay? So what I'm telling you is, when you work at this county by county level and each individual, the biggest and most powerful effective change comes when we build actual networks that are centered on the principles of this nation's constitution, which begins with putting God back on the throne of this country. There's no dollar cost to that. Remember that. So keep your head up and your eyes forward. Never bow to evil. Never relent. Always press into this fight. Our faith and our prayers are foundational in this fight. They are actually lethal in this fight. because it's our relationship with God that disrupts everything they're trying to do. And it disconnects us from the weapons of war they're trying to use against us. God has got this. He's with us. He'll never forsake us. And the only challenge we have to continue to remind ourselves is let God in everything in your life and never question or doubt what God can do for you. God will win. But the beautiful part about this time and this place is that God is using us in this fight, working through us to raise us, awaken us, and let us see more clearly as we grow as his children. So I'll see you this evening for Fishers of Men. Until then, or until the next time, God bless, and out for now.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
Every thoughtful citizen who despairs of war and wishes to bring peace should begin by looking inward, by examining his own attitude towards the possibilities of peace. Too many of us think it is impossible. Too many think it is unreal. But that is a dangerous, defeatist belief. It leads to the conclusion that war is inevitable, that mankind is doomed, that we are gripped by forces we cannot control. We need not accept that view. Our problems are man-made, therefore they can be solved by man, and man can be as big as he wants. No problem of human destiny is beyond human beings. Man's reason and spirit have often solved the seemingly unsolvable, and we believe they can do it again. Surely the opening vistas of space promise high costs and hardships, as well as high reward. So it is not surprising that some would have us stay where we are a little longer, to rest, to wait. But this city of Houston, this state of Texas, this country of the United States was not built by those who waited and rested and wished to look behind them. This country was conquered by those who move forward, and so will space. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept.
The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Thousands of years to show its face. It has only one intent, to destroy God's light and to enslave. It has no scruples. It has no rules but one, to win at any cost. But we will never bow, for we are the remnant that will hold the line. This is war. We fight. We push, we climb, we never give in, we become the nightmare that evil didn't know could exist. We pray, we stand, we live by the words, in God we trust, we fear nothing, we are the light that can never be extinguished. We are patriots. We are the digital army that will help deliver God's wrath.